In the 1970s, society was less integrated and racial divisions were more prominent. Interracial adoption wasn't as common as it is now. Being a white couple, Natalie and Dennis Weeks, my grandparents, ignored these boundaries when adopting my father, an African-American baby.
Took a long time for the agency to actually process us, because the woman who was working with us told us, she admitted to us, that she had never done this before. And she called it, I mean, it was a term that was used at the time, perhaps it's still used, is transracial adoption. And she had never done it, and she was nervous. So when it actually happened and she located this baby, she was very, very pleased with herself, I think, that she had found this brand new baby for us to meet.
It was a mutual thought between the two to adopt a child they could raise as their own.
Her grandfather, Dennis, and I came to the idea kind of at the same time. We were in the Peace Corps in Nigeria, and we met a group of children who were orphaned, and we immediately were attracted to them. We wanted to be with them and help them, because there was a taboo in the village that didn't allow other women to take care of them because their mothers had died in childbirth. So they really didn't have anybody to take care of them. He and I used to go after school, when we taught school, and we'd go and visit them and we'd spend the afternoon playing with them. I think kind of at the same time, we both sort of looked at each other and said, you know, someday it would be really great if we could adopt a child, some children, you know, even if we have our own children. We had come back to the United States, and we decided to adopt a child because actually we had had a biological child who had multiple birth defects and died the day after she was born. Then we had another pregnancy that terminated itself. And then we just kind of looked at each other and said, well, why don't we just go to our plan?
Family and friends were always there to support through their decisions, though in the beginning there was some uncertainty on her husband's side of the family.
I have 5 siblings, and my parents were alive then. And I can say right off the bat that all of those people, all of my siblings and my parents, were thrilled. They were extremely excited, and they just thought it was a great opportunity for us and for this baby. So in terms of like reaction, nobody ever said anything like, are you sure, or, you know, aren't you worried, or those kinds of things. I mean, I think they just accepted the fact that we were capable of making a decision on our own. I think mostly out of lack of experience. Your grandfather's parents were just, they were a little nervous, and they said so. They said they were nervous about it and not sure. But it never showed. You know, I think that was even when we were in the process, not when we actually brought him home and they saw him and met him for themselves. Friends definitely were very positive, and I told you earlier that we had lost 2 biological children. And so, you know, when your friends know that that's happened to you, they feel sensitive about it, and then they feel bad for you. And so I think when we did something very positive to create a family, they were very happy for us, because it's, you know, it's easier for friends to be happier for you than to feel sad or awkward around you because maybe they have children and you don't. So in a general sense, I think friends were very happy for us. And then specifically in terms of the transracial adoption portion of it, people who were our friends knew who we were. So they weren't surprised in any way, and I'm sure we had a lot of good conversations with friends about how to prepare for this experience, or how to be sensitive about it, how to be intelligent about it. So I think friends were very, very supportive, and they were in a very
important part of our being able to carry this off.
The initial adoption process took a while before they actually received the baby.
The process was perhaps a little bit more difficult than it needed to be for a couple of reasons. We started looking into it, and this was 1969. And at the time, we had just moved to New York City. We knew somebody, in fact, my sister, who was working for an adoption agency. And so we asked her about it, and she told us how many children in New York City were waiting for adoption in 1969. And the number was 4,000. We thought it would be a good idea if we tried to do something about that. We started calling adoption agencies to find out how you go about it. And we found out that it's kind of a long process, and that they would always ask us some of the same questions. They would ask us how long we had been married. And we had only been married about 2 years at that point, a little more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they said, that's not long enough. And another question they would ask us was, what religion are you? And we refused to tell them what religion we were, because we really didn't practice one religion or another, and we just decided that we wanted to keep it simple. So what they make you do at that time was to fill out a lot of paperwork about yourself and who you are, where you've lived, references that you would produce, you know, that you are persons of good character, etc., what kind of work you've done, about your education, your background. Then you have to go through a number of interviews with a person that I think they called a caseworker at the time, usually maybe a social worker. They'd interview you together as a couple and then also individually. And these things would take a long time. They'd be scheduled, like a few weeks interval between each of them, and it just seemed to go on and on and on. It took a very long time. And then we wouldn't hear anything, and so then we'd get nervous, and we'd call, and then she'd say, no, don't worry, we're just finishing the paperwork, just be patient. And actually the process ended up taking, funnily enough, 9 months.
They had specified from the beginning the kind of baby they wanted and were able to first meet him when he was 2 weeks old.
We had said that we would like to adopt an infant and a very young baby. What they did at that time was they would try to get as much information about you as possible. And meanwhile, there are other parts of their agency that are taking care of children as they're born and as they are released for adoption for, you know, 100 different reasons. And then what they called this process matching. They would try to figure out how to match a couple with a certain child. And so what happens is we literally got a phone call on a Monday morning telling us that a baby who was 2 weeks old, that they thought would be a good match. That's what they said. And they invited us to go and meet him, 2 weeks old. And so that's what we did. We got in our car and we went up to this agency outside of New York City, and they brought this baby in. We met him when he was 2 weeks old. And then you're allowed to spend time with the baby. So they gave us a bottle so that we could feed him, and they left us alone in a room with him. And we probably spent about an hour or two with him. And then they came back in and they said, well, you have to wait a week and go home. We want you to think about this before you make a final decision, and we have to think about it too. We had to hand him back to the people who are in the agency, and then we had to leave. It was terrible. We hated leaving. We stipulated at the very beginning of the process that we wanted to adopt a child of color, because we knew from the statistics, we knew that those were the children who were waiting to be adopted and weren't being adopted. There were too many. There were just way too many. There were too many children, period. And so that was a decision, and that goes way back to when we were in the Peace Corps, those couple years before. You know, we really had a kind of commitment to breaking that barrier.
Though they might have gotten some strange looks from people walking down the street, they never let the strangers' reactions to influence their feelings.
Strangers on the street would definitely look at us. So they were kind of like two reactions. One was that people were attracted to him as a baby in a stroller because he was very, very cute, in fact, really a very beautiful child. So there was that natural, oh, what a beautiful baby. And then they'd sort of look up at me and they might frown or they might say, well, whose baby is that? You know, even strangers would say these things. We learned very, very early to just be as normal as possible in responding to people, and you sort of normalize the situation, and then people responded in a way that was much more like understandable. You know, they would say, oh, and then we'd go on and that would be it. So in a way I felt like it was kind of educational for people. I never felt threatened or humiliated. It was fairly unusual at the time, except for the fact, of course, there were a lot, you know, people of different races were definitely having children together. And so it wasn't like totally unusual in a place like New York City for there to be, you know, a so-called white woman or father walking around with a child of color. So I think if we had been in some other parts of the country that were much less exposed to diversity, it might have been more difficult for us and then eventually for him.
Once adopting my father, my grandmother had many changes to her life.
I hope it's not too dramatic to say that your whole world changes, first of all, because you become a parent, and it's very scary because you don't know what you're doing. But secondly, you just become so much more acutely aware of the prejudice in the world, and you become extremely sensitive because your children, even when they're babies, you know that they're going to grow up, and you worry about the country and the world that you live in. You worry about discrimination. You worry about people hurting them psychologically, hurting them physically. And I would say that's the major way that I changed. And then, you know, also really being sensitive to the kind of discussion and conversation that goes on. Because if my children weren't with me and I was with people, of course, I'm this white person. And they may talk in ways that could be very offensive in relation to talking about people of color. Early on, I realized that, you know, I would become one of these persons who would be speaking out on behalf of my family and my children and my beliefs, that I would stand up and fight the good fight.
After adopting my father, they also adopted my aunt and uncle, my uncle being African American as well, and my aunt being Vietnamese American. My grandparents didn't let unspoken boundaries stop them from adopting children they could raise as their own.